Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Goldstein on Geld Show with financial expert Douglas Goldstein. This show is designed to give general information related to investing and finance. Neither Doug Goldstein, his guests, nor the radio station are rendering legal, tax, insurance, or specific financial advice. If you require such advice, contact a competent professional advisor. Before making any investment decisions based on what you heard during the show, please review the complete disclaimer located at www.goldsteinongeld.com. And now, here's your host, Money Maven, Doug Goldstein.
Good Money Monday. I'm Doug Goldstein. Thanks so much for joining me here today. Very excited to have you. I want to tell you about a conversation I had with a client recently, because I think it sort of raised a good question. She said, Doug, I don't understand. How can I make money and lose money at the same time? And what she was referring to was a bond portfolio that she had. And I think it's really important to understand how bonds work, because so many of the Goldstein on Geld listeners are retirees, or they're soon to be retirees, and probably one of the most common investment vehicles that retirees will use are what we generically call fixed income. Fixed income might be bank deposits or bonds, and the idea is that when you no longer have a regular paycheck, you need to have something which is going to give you regular income so you can pay your bills. And though there are a lot of tools, let's just talk for a minute about bonds. And let me try to answer this question, how can you make money and lose money at the same time? Let's go back for a second and just realize the basics of what a bond is. And, of course, the general disclaimer is that although I'm talking about this, and I did mention this is relevant for retirees, certainly this is not an investment recommendation, and make sure that you speak to a licensed investment advisor before investing in anything, including bonds. The way a bond works is that you are lending money to a government or to a company, and they agree to pay you back the money at a certain point in the future, and they pay you interest on a periodic basis, normally twice a year. So, for example, let's say you bought a $1,000 bond that matures in 5 years and pays you 4% a year. You'll pay $1,000. 5 years later, assuming the company doesn't default, they will pay you back $1,000, and every year they're going to pay you $40 in interest. Usually it comes $20 and $20 every 6 months. That's the way a basic bond works. So the $20 you're making every 6 months, or $40 a year, which is 4% of $1,000, that's the income you're getting. That's the cash flow that you're getting. So these are terms that you'll see. And normally, if you hold the bond in a brokerage account, which is normally the way that we handle it for clients, we set up U.S. brokerage accounts for them, or even in their IRAs they might have it, we buy the bond inside that account, and on interest payment day, the money just comes directly into the account and goes into the client's money market fund, which is the liquid account where they can write checks or use their debit card, or they just let it accumulate and grow over time. So that's the money coming in. But how do you lose money? Hang on in just a minute, and we'll talk about that.
Doug Goldstein, Mondays at 7 p.m.
The question I was trying to answer a minute ago was, how can you both make money and lose money at the same time? And we were talking specifically about a bond portfolio. So just to reiterate, a bond is a loan that you make to a government or to a company. They owe you the money back, and as long as they don't default, they'll pay you the money back. And every year they pay you interest. So the example we gave is, let's say you buy a $1,000 bond with a 4% coupon. Every year you'll get $40, which is 4% of $1,000. And when the bond matures, let's say, for example, it's a 5-year bond. When the bond matures, you'll get back your $1,000. So that $40 a year, that's the income you're making, and that actually builds up the value of your account. So how do you lose money? So the way that you lose money on bonds, well, there are many ways, but let's just talk about kind of the most common. One of them is if the underlying government or company is having problems. What is the market going to think if they hear, for example, that the government that issues the bond is heavily reliant on oil revenues and the price of oil has dropped in half? So that could hurt the government. That could hurt their chances of being able to pay back the bond. Do I think they're going to default? I don't know, but certainly the things are not looking as rosy as they were. So that might make the price of the bond, instead of trading at $1,000 per bond, it might only trade at $900 a bond. But here I'm using the word trade. It will only trade at that price. When it matures, the government still owes you $1,000. Why is it trading at $900? It's because some people think that the government won't be able to make that payment. They won't be able to either pay you your $40 a year coupon, or they won't be able to pay you the $1,000 at the end. So the value of the bond will drop. That's one, and so you'll see on your statement, by the way, you may see the cash coming in, you'll see the income, and that's how you're making money, but at the same time, the value of the bond could be dropping, and that would be due to the fact that people are afraid that there's something wrong, and that the government, in this, that's the example that I'm giving, that the government might not be able to pay back the value that they owe you at the end, and that would make it trade at a lower price. So let's leave it at that for a minute, and then at the end of this section, the end of part one of the Goldstein on Gelt show, I'm going to talk to you about the second most common reason that bond prices drop.
It's Money Maven, Doug Goldstein.
Okay, we are back. I'm very happy to have on the Goldstein on Gelt show Joe Saul-Sehy, who is the co-host of a fantastic podcast called Stacking Benjamins. He's also a former financial advisor. Joe, real pleasure to have you.
Doug, thanks for having me on the show. I can't believe I'm here.
So Stacking Benjamins. Well, your name's not Benjamin, so where did you get the name of the show?
It is not. Well, in the United States, the Benjamins are $100 bills. And if we can stack $100 bills instead of stacking $1 bills, that's much better.
I like thinking big. That is a great idea.
Amen.
So you were a financial advisor for a really long time, and you helped a lot of people. And then you've kind of moved on into the world of media, which probably means you're leveraging yourself to help a lot more people. So one of the biggest issues, of course, that I find as a financial advisor myself, not yet retired from that part of my field, is it's not that people make the wrong investment choice, meaning they can't figure out how to invest. It's more often people do badly investing simply because of really crummy mistakes that they make. What would you say is the most common mistake you see people making when managing their money?
Well, first, I think you're right on. It's not the million-dollar mistakes I saw people making. Everybody thought they were messing up really technical stuff. It was simply the basics. And I think the biggest one that I saw in my time as an advisor was always we had no idea what the end game plan was. And it seemed like when we started off with goal-based investing instead of market-based investing, you know, market-based investing is when we're looking at the price of oil might be low, technology might be low, or gold is low, or whatever it might be, we're going to make some mistakes because we don't go in with a strategy. But if I know that I need to save X dollars per month and earn a Y rate of return to reach, let's say, my retirement goal, then I know I can set benchmarks along the way to reach that goal. And I'll know every year if I'm ahead of the game or if I'm behind the game. And then that drives my investing and my saving decisions. And because we don't start with that end goal, and it's amazing, Doug, for 16 years, I would tell people that, and they would look at me like, I've never heard this before. This is absolutely amazing. And it seems very, very simple to me.
So let's dig into that a little more, because certainly the concept of goals, it makes sense. But the problem is, I've found, is that people, you know, if you talk to them, well, let's first set goals and then, you know, then we'll work backwards and do a plan. You know, they go, yeah, that's nice, right? But this feeling of goal setting, I think for many people is very amorphous. And it's not just amorphous, it's kind of, and I was going to use the word ridiculous. They get it, but it seems like not a human way to work because people are so not used to working that way. How do you bring people to the point where they realize, you know, goal is not an evil thing. It's you know, it's not a dream, like it's not wishful thinking. How do you explain that to people?
Well, it's simply a difference between what we want today and making what we want tomorrow equal in our brain what we want to what we want today. So what I mean is this: when I go to a store and I see a sweater I want, I can touch it, I can feel it, I know what it is. When I think about retirement, well, you know, maybe for a listener today, that's 35 years into the future. Who knows what that's going to look like? And because it's this cloudy thing out there, I think, why am I going to put together this plan to get that? And buying the sweater is right here. I know it and I can touch it. And I found as a financial planner, the more the more we crystallize that goal. And by the way, some people out there might be thinking, you know, I'm 28 years old. I have no idea what that's going to look like. It really, it almost doesn't matter. We just need to crystallize it and put specifics about what that goal looks like, so we feel like we can touch that goal as much as we can touch the sweater. I think that's why a lot of these websites online that I'm seeing popping up all over the place, new blog saying retire by 40 or retire under 40, is so somebody who's in their 20s can get that feeling about what, you know, they can bring the goal a little closer. They can actually smell it.
The smell test. You know, I think that's a good way to describe it. One of the things that this issue of goal setting has really been on my mind for a long time. You know, I wrote a book recently with a world chess champion about how the strategies of chess could be applied to investing. And interestingly, we spent a lot of time talking about goal setting. But one of the things that that I tried to really get her to pin down, because I have this belief that everything about investing can be learned from chess, was what does she really mean when she sets a goal? And we ended up coming up with this cute acronym for strategic, or at least for the first five letters, S-T-R-A-T. And the very first S from the strategic goal setting was that it has to be specific. And it's just like what you're saying, which is if you can smell it, it's specific. You know exactly what it is that you want. And I think that people realizing that, you know, Joe, the way you're describing it is a great way to put it.
Well, and it seems like not only should it be strategic, and I love that acronym that you use, I think you need to take this goal that seems strategic and make it tactical, which I think also has a lot to do with chess. You have this long-term goal, but then when we break it up into yearly milestones that we need to reach, I found a lot of the times, Doug, my client didn't get it initially. They got it at the one-year meeting when they come into my office and we take all of their investments, wherever they might be, and we add them together and we see if we're ahead or behind that milestone. And once they saw that's not a 25-year goal, that is a goal every single year. And it's almost like, you know, it's eating an elephant, right? There's that old analogy that when you eat an elephant, eat it one bite at a time. and making that milestone so that it's in the near future instead of way out will help you reach those big, huge, scary goals.
I think that's a critical way to describe it, certainly with the elephant idea. We're talking to Joe Saul Sehy, who, apart from being the co-host of a fantastic podcast called Stacking Benjamins, also has years and years of experience in the financial planning world. He's also actually written a white paper called Launching Your Personal Finance Rocket, The Surprising Reason Why You Shouldn't Take Advice from Dave Ramsey, Susie Orman, or The Motley Fool. Now, I have to say, I haven't seen this yet, and I'm very curious because listeners of the Goldstein on Geld show know that Dave Ramsey has a regular piece on the show here. But I'm dying to know what it's about. And Joe has told us at the end of today's discussion, he's going to show us how people can download a free copy, right, Joe?
Yeah, absolutely.
A free copy of that white paper.
Yes. And I'll tell you, Doug, it's not as incendiary as the title suggests. The reason you shouldn't follow a specific guru has less to do with the guru as it has to do with you. And you'll learn more as you read that.
All right. So I'm definitely going to encourage people just to hang on in just a couple of minutes. We'll tell you how you can get that white paper for free. Joe, let's dive into a different area, because something else that I find talking with people is sometimes it turns out people are not saving enough money. And so I actually had on this show, I've had many financial advisors on the show, and they talk about different models for saving. But at the end of the day, someone has to make the decision and say, you know, I'm committed to saving. And then they turn to me and they go, Doug, how do I do it? What do I not buy? So what would you advise people as the first steps in order to become savers as opposed to spenders?
It's funny, Doug. I wrote a piece on our blog about this just a couple weeks ago that I love to focus on my unique talent. I have only a few things that I can focus on in a day and be successful. And I found that in my financial planning practice. I find that with Stacking Benjamins. Anything in my life, I can't focus on everything. So for everything else that's important, but not something I want to focus on in that day, and for most of us that's saving money, I have to automate it. And so I need to get in and use any tool I can find to automate my savings that's out there. And it no longer, so people hear that, maybe their eyes roll in the back of their head. Yeah, I've heard that before. And maybe you're automating your retirement plan, maybe some money going into a mutual fund or into a brokerage account or college fund, whatever it might be. But now there are even apps out there where with the price of oil being low and we save money at a gas pump, now I can take the money that I saved on one trip to the gas pump, let's say it's $10 that I didn't spend that I might maybe spent 2 months earlier, I can take that with this app, I can have that money exit my checking account, go into my longer-term savings.
So well, you better do that quickly because they're talking about taxing the price of gas back up to the original level.
Isn't that funny how the government finds a way? Hey, well, it's low. People don't expect it. Yeah. But it's little things like that, taking advantage of some of these cool new apps. And I don't know that I want to specify one because there's a ton of new technology out there that's really exciting that can help people automate their finances better and make it so that we pay less attention but get more money saved.
So what do you suggest to people who like the idea, but they're not at the moment in their life when they should be saving money because they're so much in debt that they really have to start by paying off debt? Any pearls of wisdom for getting started there?
I think that my only pearl of wisdom would be this, is that the Dave Ramsey approach of the debt snowball and putting $1,000 away into a savings account, or putting a minimum amount away into a savings account, so that you don't have to go back to the credit card again, is essential. And I see this fight on the internet, that's gone on and on about the difference between the inefficiency of the debt snowball and something more efficient called the debt avalanche, where instead of using the Ramsey method of paying the smallest amount first and then the larger amount, starting with the highest interest rate first. I think you can do both by using some of the tools, once again, that are out there that didn't used to exist when Dave Ramsey first wrote his book. So one tool I like is called Ready for Zero. Payoff.com is another one. Some free tools out there where you can – the crux of the Dave Ramsey debt snowball argument, the way I see it, is that you're getting small wins and you can see it. And a lot of these new exciting apps help people – get that visualization that we all need as humans, but be more efficient than we will if we do it the set debt snowball way.
Yeah, I think that's great. And a lot of the apps also, I know, have sort of a community nature. In fact, you know, when like the diet apps as well, you know, you write and I lost a pound, and then your friends or whoever you decided to share this with see it and they can send you a little thumbs up, and it makes you feel, because this is very, very psychological. Obviously, the math is pay off the debt first and then start saving, but that's, if you just tell people that, you can tell them 1,000 times, it won't make any difference. But until you can make it part of who they are and build it into their habits and make them feel good about it, you're not going to really be able to succeed. Joe,
we totally are, Doug, not to jump in here, but we totally are what we think about. Before I moved to Texarkana, Texas, where I live now, you know, the heart of money saving country is Texarkana, Texas.
I did not know that. the capital of money saving. Okay.
You learn everything on Goldstein on Gelt. But before I moved here, I was a runner. I ran a few 5Ks. All my friends, when I moved here, Doug, they all run marathons. I never wanted to run a marathon. I didn't care about running a marathon. I've lived here for 5.5 years. I have now run 10 marathons. Oh, and you know what it is? It's community. So if I want to pay off debt, I want to join whatever community I can get into of like-minded individuals, because they'll help you achieve it.
That is fantastic. Joe, I have like a lot more to go over, but not only could we fill up hours and hours of the Goldstein on Gelt show, but I know a lot of the questions that I'm asking and a lot of the great ideas you have are on your blog. And I also know that you told us you would give us access to your white paper launching your personal finance rocket. So in the last few seconds, just tell people how they can learn about you, how they can follow you, and of course, how they can get access to this white paper.
Well, thanks a lot for having me on again, Doug. By the way, this was fantastic.
A lot of fun. Thank you.
I love doing this. I love the show. It's so what I did was I curated articles from the Stacking Benjamins website and some of our shows that I think that your community will like more than others. And to get all that plus access to the white paper, I set up one simple page that has it all. And if you go to stackingbenjamins.com/Goldstein, it'll give you all that. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm Average Joe Money. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/iStackBenjamins. And, you know, our goal is to have a lot of fun. Your goal is to teach people. Our goal at Stacking Benjamins in our podcast is just to have that community. We jokingly say we never want to teach anybody anything ever.
All right, goal. But I know you do. So people who listen to you are not going to get away without becoming a little bit smarter.
No,
Joe Saul-Sehy, I want to thank you very, very much. And I'd like to encourage everyone to go to those links, we'll put links to all of that at the show notes of today's GoldsteinOnGelt.com website. Joe, thanks again.
Thanks a lot.
You're tuned to Doug Goldstein's Personal Finance Show, where you learn how to make the most of your money.
We opened up the show talking about bonds, and the question I was trying to answer was, how can you both make money and lose money at the same time? So we looked at how bonds work. A bond is a loan that you make to a government or to a company. Let's say you lend them $1,000 and it's a 5-year bond. During those 5 years, they'll pay you the annual coupon. Let's say it's a 4% bond, so you would make $40 a year on a $1,000 bond. And at the end, they pay you back the $1,000, assuming they haven't defaulted. So it's guaranteed by the issuer. And of course, we always say that a guarantee is only as good as the guarantor. So that's one of the big risks that you have to understand, is the company or government to whom you're lending the money stable enough, and will they continue to be stable over the next 5 years, if that's the length of the bond, to pay you back? So if they have financial troubles, that could make the price of the bond drop, and of course, therefore, you would see the value of your portfolio drop. Doesn't necessarily mean you'll stop getting the $40 every year. That's the interest payment that they owe you. It could, if they're having real problems, they might stop. But let's look at another reason why bonds might drop in price, and it's something called interest rate risk. Let's say you buy today a 4% bond, and then next year interest rates go to 7%. What's going to happen to the price of your bond? Don't forget, you're still going to get your $40 a year, because that's the deal, and the government or company that issued the bond is still going to pay you back the $1,000 at the end, assuming that they are still in business, which normally they are, by the way. I'm not trying to frighten you. Most bonds usually do fine, and they pay back their interest and principal. But the value of the bond during the life of the bond is actually going to drop, because if people wanted to buy a bond next year, they would say, wait a second, I can go and buy a 7% bond. Why would I buy your 4% bond? That no longer looks good in today's market environment. So you'll see the value of your bond is going to drop on your statement. If you sell it, you'll get back less than you paid. You'd actually lose money. But if you hold on to it to the end, then the issuer is responsible to pay you back the full $1,000. So you'll see the value of bonds fluctuate over the life of the bond. That's normal. And when you buy them, make sure you speak to your advisor about what type of bonds you're buying and how normal are the fluctuations. And once you realize, or if you realize that it's for you, you can now understand why at the same time you can both make money and lose money by investing in bonds. All right, we're just about out of time for part one. Be sure to stay tuned for part two, where we're going to talk about materialism. Are you a material girl or boy, as Madonna would say? Let's find out in part two of the Goldstein on Gelt show when we talk to Tim Kasser, a professor of psychology.
You're listening to Money Maven Doug Goldstein on the Goldstein on Gelt show. Stay tuned for the second half of the show right after the break.